We'll call this meeting to order. I'm glad everybody survived the eclipse mageddon here, and we're all here. So first of all, before we get into the agenda, we want to introduce a new member here, Mark Kupski, if I pronounce that right, Vice President of the Southwestern Illinois Council of Mayors, and your mayor of
Fairview Heights.
Fairview Heights. I'm going to tell you, if you do a good job, you'll get promoted to over here.
Tom's already trying.
There you go. All righty. With that, if there are any, if there are no additions or corrections to the minutes, we need a motion to approve.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second to approve. Question?
Can I say something before you start?
Yeah.
If I'm in order, and if I'm out of order, I apologize. Could we have a moment of silence for the deceased one that was in Houston when you get started the meeting?
That would be.
Would I be allowed asking that?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I think that would be very appropriate. If you would, we'll have a moment of silence. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Believe me, we are very, we've had our troubles, but we've certainly had nothing on the scale of that. Thank you, Roy, for that. We have a motion and a second to approve minutes. Question? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Discussion items. Transportation alternatives, program project applications. Rachel.
Good morning.
Staff announced the call for project applications for federal funding through the Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP, on April 4th. The application for 2019. TAP provides funding for a variety of smaller scale transportation projects, like bicycle electric facilities, community for tax relief, environmental mitigation activities, and safe routes to multi-traffic programs. Applications are evaluated using criteria based on the council's long-range transportation plan, and the Transportation Planning Committee made funding recommendations at its August 2017 meeting. In Illinois, we received 15 project applications, requesting approximately $3.8 million in federal funds. The Illinois Transportation Planning Committee recommended 6 projects that cost about $1.46 million. Missouri, we received 33 project applications requesting approximately $18 million in federal funds. And the Missouri Transportation Planning Committee recommended 15 projects at a cost of $9.1 million in TAP funds. Attachment A in your memo shows that we have Transportation Planning Committee recommendations by state. The recommended projects have been posted on the council's website for public comment. The public comment period started on August 3rd and concluded on September 5th. Following the public comment period, staff will bring the TAP recommended projects to you at your meeting on September 27th for final approval and amendment to the fiscal year 2018-2021 transportation improvement program.
All right. Questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next item, Illinois Great Street Solicitation, all of them.
Thank you. We're getting ready to announce our call for projects for Great Street Planning Assistance in Illinois. This will be one of our smaller types of projects, not one of the sort of tapping the or more expensive projects. So the snapshot of it is going to be about $70,000 fee, that would be the maximum. It's a strategic plan report, not a detailed plan that you might be more familiar with. Project selection will occur this fall. We're going to go out for weeks with the call for projects. Board action on consultant selection is expected in January. And then the project will be completed in 2018 by June 30th. End of fiscal year. So the project selection process, Illinois isn't as familiar with the Missouri side of the river for this program. So this is higher level discussion again. We'll not be hiring a large team for individual consultants. centered on a fairly compact four-day charrette process. It's about a four and a half month long effort, start to stop. The local project sponsor is on the hook for facilitating all the community engagement and hosting the charrette site, or giving a place to cut the charrette. And then strategic plan report is written by East West Gateway staff based on white papers from the consultant and input from the project sponsor. So Call for Projects is coming up in September. Half-day application workshop is September 27th at IDOT. This will all be in the Call for Projects. The intent of that is to, you know, attract communities that are interested in this, kind of help them dovetail their project to program and really assist their application writing. Applications will be in October, and then by early November we'll have the project selected. $70,000 again, max for consultant fees. There's no local match. Illinois has a budget now. IDOT is contributing a match for this. However, any costs associated with engagement will have to be borne by the project sponsor. Process, the step one, the consultants and the project sponsor and us, we spend some time sort of learning about the community in an academic sense, sort of the book smart, the data, the history, the lay of the land, so that we are familiar with the place before we start going into community. We know a little bit more what we're talking about. Meaningful discussions. Four-day charrette, this is a sample from a project we did last year, which is a similar process. And you can see this is just 4 days in 1 week. This is this workshop charrette process that we talk about. At the end of three of those days, we have public meeting, we have focus groups, sessions, we have interviews, we're out checking conditions on the ground, talking to utility companies, all of this sort of thing. And as those days progress, it's, you're getting more and more specific and more refined testing options and arriving at a clear direction. Now, the nature of this is less polished than a detailed plan report, but the content is quite meaningful. The end report we finished in summer of 2018. For any comments or questions on this, we can take them. If not, particularly those on the Illinois side, I encourage you to look at the follow-up projects, and if you have any questions, please contact me.
Questions or comments? Seeing none, did a good job. Thank you very much. Now for one of the thorny ones. Sporting criteria for search transportation block grant program. Rachel.
East West Gateway has been working on updating the project sporting criteria for the selection of local projects funded under the Federal Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, or STB. Federal transportation law says MAP 21 and included in the current federal transportation law, FACTA, or FAST Act, requires the establishment of performance-based planning and programming. The purpose of performance-based planning and programming is to get a better return on investment of federal transportation funds by using data-driven decision-making and providing clear documentation about why transportation dollars were spent in a certain area. East West Gateway's long-range transportation plan, Connected 2045, and ultimately our Transportation Improvement Program, or the TIP, are required to demonstrate a link between funding and system performance. Performance-based planning and programming ensures that resources are invested in projects that make progress towards achieving desired performance outcomes for our region. To guide decision-making and comply with federal transportation legislation, the long-range transportation plan contains a performance management framework that is built around East West Gateway's 10 guiding principles. These principles are aligned with federal and state goals and related performance measures. To move forward with attaining these goals, STP projects need to be measured by how they address the principles of Connected 2045 and meet the performance goals of the plan. STP is the largest source of federal transportation funds available to local agencies in the St. Louis region. In Missouri, approximately $35 to $40 million is available each year, and in Illinois, approximately $5 million is available each year. STP is also the most flexible source of funds and can be used on roads, bridge, bridges, transit capital, as well as standalone bicycle and pedestrian facilities. The development of the draft STP criteria began early last year, first internally. It was based on the requirements of the FAST Act, the performance management framework in our long-range transportation plan, looking at best practices from other metropolitan planning organizations, as well as academic research. In mid-2016, we convened 6 focus groups of representative regional experts from our Transportation Planning Committee, from East West Gateway's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, local universities, and state departments of transportation to get their input and feedback on the draft criteria. The focus groups were organized by project application type, and 2 meetings were held for each focus group, and based on their input, we further developed the draft criteria. Staff then presented the draft criteria to the Transportation Planning Committee in September 2016, and then in October, it was determined by a test evaluation of STP projects and measured how the draft criteria fared using actual projects from an STP funding round. It was not possible to evaluate the old STP projects using the draft criteria. So the STP application from the fiscal year 2018-2021 funding round was revised to include additional questions related to the draft scoring criteria. Staff scored 120 projects using the current fiscal year 2018-2021 evaluation criteria first, and submitted the scores to the Transportation Planning Committee in May 2017 for funding recommendations. Following the May Transportation Planning Committee meeting, we began the test evaluation using the draft scoring criteria. The draft scoring criteria contains specific metrics for each project type, including road, bridge, traffic flow, safety, active transportation, transit, and freight and economic development. The metrics align with the 10 guiding principles in our long-range plan. All project types compete against each other, and funding is not set aside in silos by project type. After the test evaluation was complete, we were able to determine what was working with the criteria and what needed to be modified. Adjustments were made, and all applications were restored using the updated values and metrics. The modifications of the draft scoring criteria and the results of the test evaluation were presented to the team by the Transportation Planning Committee at its August 2017 meeting. We are currently accepting comments from the Transportation Planning Committee, and we will incorporate any feedback to the draft scoring criteria, and then we will seek approval from the Transportation Planning Committee at its meeting in September. We will then seek approval from you at your meeting on September 27th. Overall, the test evaluation was essential for determining the effectiveness of the draft scoring criteria, and it also enabled us to further refine the draft scoring criteria to make it consistent with the goals of our long-range transportation plan. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Rachel, first a specific question and more general later. You mentioned there needs to be, under this, a link between funding and performance. Okay, so if we had a mass transit system where the ridership goes down every year, but the funding goes up every year, what would happen?
Well, in the past, we haven't received a large request for transit.
So there's several different performance measures too that we're looking at, whether it's transit or roads or bridges. One of those is age of the fleet, which as the fleet gets older, we need to replace those vehicles.
And that's why people aren't riding?
Not necessarily. I there are instances where, or has been a trend, the ridership's going down.
Okay, well, that's...
So if that's a measure we're going to use...
I just want to know if we're really serious about that part of it.
Yeah, so there's several different measures. There'd be ridership, there'd be age of the fleet, there'd be those types of things. So those are all open for discussion in terms of how we're going to address it through the evaluation process. But some of them are not open for discussion because it's what we have to deal with from FTA, from Federal Highways, from State DOT.
On the proposal that we have right now, not to sound parochial, but you know, in St. Charles County, we have 70% of the population. Last year, we got 15% of the money. Under this proposal, we get 7%. Jefferson County is only a little bit better off than we are. Mr. Chairman, you're going to take a hit too. So these are the three counties that people are moving to. They're choosing to move there. We're creating jobs. We need additional money for transportation. What have we been doing wrong? What's wrong with this, with the projects we had this year that we would not get them under this new farm bill? What are we doing wrong?
So we are working on addressing our criteria to revise it. We understand that there's a big difference between our urban environments and our rural environments and our suburban environments. So we are proposing to make changes to the criteria and bring that to our transportation planning committee. Also, federal TIP regulations state that we cannot use predetermined percentages or formulas to be used to distribute the STD cards. But we are working on, I understand your concerns, and we are working on improving our criteria.
Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions or comments? The Executive Advisory Committee had a lengthy discussion on this issue. And I know the concern is obviously that everybody is scored fairly, and that's the bottom line. I mean, for those of us that are the little ducks in a big pond, you know, the concern I think was that, you know, if the scoring criteria has changed, then obviously the bigger counties are going to get the bulk of the money, and those of us that don't have a population are not, and they're going to get less money. And I don't know what the magic formula is to do that. I know that one issue that was brought to my attention is that in the scoring, I think at least what I'm seeing, you get more points if you have MetroLink than if you don't. I think that is particularly is an issue for those of us that will not probably ever have the opportunity to get MetroLink.
And that's something that we are looking at. So that those municipalities that don't have public transit available can take
that. Chairman, Rachel, is there a reason, and I didn't get a chance, I got to talk to Jim just briefly, is there a reason that the scoring criteria is changing? Is there something that was mandated, something that said you have to do this, and then now you're working on a system that, you know, you try to make it fair? I mean, it sounds like you're trying to do a fair job. But did something change that we missed that is creating this issue? It's like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I mean, I've looked at the projects that are on the board 7 years, and it looks like all of the counties, at least the Missouri side, have gotten their fair share of projects, St. Louis County, the city, to the other three counties that we're talking about. So can you help me figure that out?
Yeah, and it all boils down to our federal transportation legislation. That's not requiring us to performance-based planning program. We've been developing our long-range plan, our staff performance measures, and now we're following up with the short-range projects to address, or not address, but to follow the intentions of our long-range plan.
I guess Rachel will follow up on that. Have they said that the way that we've been doing it prior is wrong? Have they identified, you know, some problems, or is it just a new policy that they've brilliantly come up with that now we've got to change everything?
It's not technically wrong. Just right now we're looking at how closely the projects are tied to our principles in our long-range transportation plan. we are still looking at cost, but cost isn't made isn't having such a huge impact on the results of the projects as it has been in our previous programs.
Also, through our certification review, one of the recommendations is that we start moving toward that performance-based planning and programming requirement that's in the FAST funds.
But this isn't required. We're not going to lose federal funds if we don't change this.
Betsy?
No.
It depends on how picky they're going to be.
Well, I guess my question is, who decided the other one was wrong and who's pushing to change it?
Congress. Congress, when they passed the FAST Act, when they approved the federal legislation, the motion was to go towards...
You're telling me a Republican tried to screw the Frank and Harrison in St. Charles County. I got to go work with that.
Yeah, they did all that. But these are policies that are set out by federal legislation that we have to abide by.
Well, and again, the bottom line is we want a system that's fair, not only to the big counties, but to the smaller ones too. And trying to find that magic number and criteria, the formula that works, is going to be tough. But you know, just so you understand, you know, we want the larger counties to get their fair share, but yet a smaller guys want the opportunity for the same. So. I mean, there is a huge concern over this with everybody.
Well, know that this is, it's closer to the beginning than the end on this. I mean, Rachel and our staff, and a lot of your staff have been involved for the last year, year and a half on this, and put a lot of work into this. As we roll out this new system, naturally, we're going to start having questions and concerns from the players that actually need to use the money, right, to build projects to address needs in their jurisdictions. So now's the time to be providing that input, those comments. The TPC is certainly going to be addressing it, Illinois and Missouri TPC. They've addressed it a couple times now. And we're closer to the beginning than the end.
So. Could you let us know, Rachel, for us three counties, just what those major changes are, like I may see the red light version, but you know, what you had before, then some of the things. And you know, I mean, sounds like we're concerned, but you know, I also defer to my counterparts, the mayor of St. Louis and the county executive of St. Louis County. I know they got to get their fair share of money too. So, I mean, I'm all aware of why we sit on this board. You know, it's not all about us all the time. In this case, it sure looks like we're getting the short end of the stick based on what we see right now. So if you could help us out with that and give us some idea of what we can do differently or how we can lobby it, you know, and maybe find a median somewhere in the middle, you know, as compromise, I would sure be reflective of that. Again, I respect the mayor and the county executive in these big counties because I know they got a lot of things that have to be done. We drive into their counties, their city every day. So.
I don't want to say it was a total overhaul, but we're still looking at a lot of the priorities that we had in our previous current criteria, such as preservation, providing long-time mobile facilities. But the main difference I want to say is we have a new category, great economic development. We're also looking at great economic development improvements in project support. Our road projects, our traffic projects, and our safety contracts. So preservation is still the size of the priority. We're trying to address something called the transportation category. But ultimately, the difference is we have seven different project application types. Depending on what the priority of your project is, that's the application that you apply for. And we don't have the cost effectiveness method that we were using currently. So therefore, the projects are more based on how well it performs under our long-range transportation plan and has impacted our costs.
I'm just stating, you know, this is another clear example. I mean, we've all had projects that we thought would have made it the first time around, and it took longer. But to me, this is another example of we're trying to fix something that didn't broke, you know. But unfortunately, the federal government sometimes doesn't think before they do stuff like this. So, you know, all we can do is hope that, you know, cooler heads prevail and we can work out some kind of a compromise. Anybody got anything else? Rachel, thank you very much. All right, next item on the agenda is for the FirstNet program, Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to give you some information about a project the federal government is doing, so we continue the federal government discussion. In the area of first responders to help improve interoperable communications. But this is not on the land mobile side, this is the Wi-Fi broadband network. Back in June of 2009, the United States government mandated that all broadcast television stations had to become digitally broadcast. Now, what that meant was they had to, the television stations had to vacate the 700 megahertz spectrum band. It's going to be a little bit technically seconds. So what that meant was several 700 megahertz frequencies then became available that were then auctioned off by the government and are now being used by the broadband carriers to allow us to enjoy the Wi-Fi networks that we currently do on the commercial carriers, whether it's AT&T, Sprint, or Verizon, or one of the other carriers. Now, in addition to that, in February of 2012, the federal government through the Congress mandated that the FCC allocate some of those 700 megahertz frequencies that they were auctioning off, to keep some of those back to be used to develop a nationwide broadband network that will be specifically for first responders, for public safety agencies only. In addition, they were to start up this body of people, a board committee called the First Responder Network Authority, which we now refer to as the FirstNet Authority. That authority was then supposed to work to build this nationwide broadband network, using expertise from first responders and technical experts in the broadband industry to build this network. In addition, from the money that was gained from the auctioning off the frequencies to the broadband carriers, $7 billion was supposed to be set aside, again, to build that broadband network. Now, why is there a need for this broadband network for first responders? Like everything else in interoperable communications, a gap was recognized on 9/11 when the Twin Towers collapsed. The Twin Towers had on top of their building various antennas that provided the broadband network to downstate New York and also parts of New Jersey. When the towers collapsed, those broadband networks went away. And what remained immediately collapsed because everybody was trying to use their networks to talk about what had just occurred. So obviously there was a shortfall there. So that was why they actually said there was a need for first responders, not only for a broadband network, but specifically for first responders, so that when whatever may happen, that network would be there to support the response efforts. In addition, back in 2010, when we first started building the St. Louis Digital Microwave Network, our goal was to complete the microwave network and then start looking at providing broadband coverage for the St. Louis area. But we realized very quickly it was going to be very expensive. So by the government, the federal government bringing in this additional funding to do it, it assists the local jurisdictions who were at that time looking to build it on their own. So in January, the FirstNet Authority released an RFP to hire a company to build this network. They had 16 different objectives, some of which I'm going to point out here. Obviously, it was the number one objective was to build, deploy, operate, and maintain this nationwide public safety network. It was also supposed to establish a pricing structure that would work across multiple service agencies, whether it's a metropolitan area like the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department or a rural community like the Joe Platinum Ambulance District. The pricing structure had to be enough that would fit no matter what type of area it was going to cover. It also had to support ruggedized devices that could be used either wearing a glove or one hand or be totally hands-free operations and provide the highest level of cybersecurity on the network and obviously make sure that the system is secure. In addition, they have to provide this network, this service, to maintain no matter what's occurred, no matter whether it's a natural technological disaster, and it had to operate at what we call 3 nines of reliability, 99.9. Now, what that means is at 3 nines of reliability, the network could go down just under 44 minutes per month. So the network could not be there for 44 minutes per month. Remember that part. Also, it has to provide a solution that allows service priority and pre-exception. Service priority means that if I have service priority, when I use my phone, I automatically get on the network no matter what. I'm first on the network. Pre-exception means if the network is crowded and there's no space for me, somebody gets knocked off. So if you're talking on your phone and I need to get on the network and I push the button, you're going to lose a drop call, or you're going to have a drop call because the system's going to recognize me as being a service priority and pre-exception, so I'm going to come on the network no matter what. And then last, the system had to, or the winning vendor had to make a 25-year commitment to support the network. In June of this year, it was announced that AT&T was awarded that RFP. AT&T and their partners, which are Motorola, General Dynamics, and Inmarsat, and Sapien Consulting. That team has been awarded and has begun building the first responder network across the United States. Now, what does that mean? FirstNet remains as a program management source. They will provide expertise across the country from first responders and technical experts that will guide AT&T in the building of the network. In addition, they will get these 700 megahertz frequencies that were set aside for the broadband carriers. You remember at the beginning, those frequencies were put aside by FCC to build this network. It's referred to now as Band 14. So you may hear this amongst first responders talking about Band 14. That's the 700 megahertz frequencies that were set aside by the FCC. In addition, $6.5 billion is going to be given to AT&T to build the network from the FirstNet. AT&T will provide $180 billion in existing infrastructure services and provide $40 billion in investments in technical innovations that they now currently have. And lastly, they're given technical experts. In addition, within the FirstNet plan, there will be priority and pre-exemption, which the AT&T says will exist even before the end of this year. It will be deployed in both urban and rural areas. Urban areas now and within 5 years will be in the rural areas. It will also provide deployable devices if a major incident occurs and there's a shortfall of devices that need to be used. So they'll not only show up with handheld units, or they'll even show up with mobile broadcast sites that can beef up the system if the need arises, and provide Wi-Fi hotspots, some of which already exist in building companies. So here's the big key right now. FirstNet is going to be built by AT&T. Each state has to decide if they want to opt into the FirstNet program or opt out of the program. Each state has the end of the year to make that decision. The map you see here, all the green states have made their commitments to opt in. Just this past week, Nevada and Hawaii announced that they're going to opt into the FirstNet plan. The blue states are still trying to decide which way they want to go, opt in or opt out. In Illinois, they've not made any decision at this point. There is a third option, it's to do nothing at all. The FirstNet network is going to be built in your state, and it could be then just left up to the first responder and public safety agencies to decide which way they want to go. In Missouri decided to release an RFP of their own, referred to as the Public Safety Broadband Safety Access Network. The RFP actually closed on August 21st. The intent here is to gauge what other services may be out there that could be better or cheaper than what FirstNet is providing. The Missouri State Interoperable Emergency Communications Commission is going to review those responses along with the Missouri Office of Administration and make a decision provided to the governor at some point about what is the better option here. And again, all state governors have until the end of the year to decide if they want to opt in or opt out. And one last point is, no one is forced to go in either direction. Local jurisdictions, local police departments, fire departments can remain on whatever carrier is best to their advantages. Now, just recently, the STARS Interoperable Communications Committee formed the FirstNet subcommittee to look at the AT&T plan and make recommendations to the state. These are the recommendations they came up with. First, the AT&T rate plan need to allow for pooling and bridge purchases. The point there is the 22 gigabytes per device limit. So each device on the AT&T network is going to be limited at 22 gigabytes per month. If any of you have had a teenager on your family plan, you'll know that that 22 gigabytes is going to get eaten up really quick, especially in emergency response. So that's why the STARS FirstNet subcommittee has made that recommendation that there should be allowable pooling, because that way you can pull those gigabytes from someone who's not using all of their capabilities. In addition, in-building and rural coverage is our biggest concern, obviously. And the public safety system needs to be at 6 nines of reliability, not 3. At 6 nines of reliability, that means the network can be down to just under 3 seconds per month. Remember, before it was just under 44 minutes per month. Even a minute is critical time, depending on when you need to use that network. And the other part here is it needs to be a public safety grade, meaning no single point of failure. The St. Louis Digital Microwave Network was built to 6 nines of reliability and has no single point of failure. Many of you may have seen some of my presentations on that. We have 5 river crossings with the microwave network. We really only need 1 to get across the river, but by having 5, that's at no single point of failure. And the current FirstNet AT&T rates that are in their plan are not competitive with existing rates by Sprint or Verizon. Now, just last week, this came out. Verizon has announced that they're going to build their own dedicated public safety network. So you can see this competition is being developed already. The big key here is AT&T gets the $6.5 billion from the federal government and gets the band 14 frequencies to build this dedicated public safety network. That's one thing they will have over Verizon and any other agency or any other company that's going to try to build a public safety network. Over the next several months, especially by the end of the year, we'll know which way the state of Missouri is going to go. Any questions?
Just want to, for the sake of full disclosure, Jim and I were asked by AT&T to have East West Gateway draw up a resolution in support of the national program, the state adopting the program. And rather than do that, we wanted STARS, you got it, Nick, and STARS to take a look at it and make a recommendation for it. And you guys have done a tremendous job, and take a look at it, and you can give us a recommendation of what to do.
So now the state of Illinois is going to be going through a similar process. So.
Right. They haven't really decided if they're going to release their own RFP or if they're going to opt in or opt out. They're still studying the whole AT&T plan as well. So yeah, we're in touch with them. Joe Galvin is the state director in Illinois. We link up with him all the time. So whatever we do, we'll bring it back there.
Guessing they're partnering with other states that are going through the same questioning?
Yes. Kansas. Matter of fact, we coordinate with the park in Kansas City, who coordinates with the state of Kansas, so we're coordinating with everybody.
Questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, he said, can you give me a deadline for Illinois? Is there a deadline on that?
It's the end of the year. Every state has to the end of the year to decide what they're going to do. I should point out, if the state decides to do something on their own, they have to submit that plan to AT&T FirstNet, and AT&T FirstNet has to review it to say if it's a viable plan or not, and they have to approve it. If they approve it, there's funding that they can get to build this optional plan. But as you saw on that map, most every state is going with the AT&T plan because, again, they've got that band 14, which will become that dedicated network.
But the money that they're going to get to help build, would that come out of that $6.5 billion?
Yeah, it's a $7 billion that is set aside for the sale of the frequencies at the beginning.
So it's money that AT&T has in hand and they'd have to pass off to someone else.
So $6.5 billion that FirstNet will get to AT&T.
But I'm asking if a state or a Verizon or somebody decided to build their own and the state decided to go that way with it?
That's the remaining 5.
That's the remaining 5.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Dick, thank you very, very much. All right, action items. The auditor's report on the financial statements for the calendar year 2016.
The audit for 2016 was conducted by Kerman and Draco. The auditors issued an unqualified opinion on the 12/31 financial statements. and unqualified opinion means that the auditor gives a reasonable assurance that the financial statements are presented with a true and fair view of the financial information contained. As a recipient of federal funds, we are also required to take a signal audit form. KDB also performed the additional audit work that was required for a single audit during their field work, and the results of that review is shown on page 37 of the report. There were no findings in the audit and the results of the staff's recommendation that the board accept the auditor's report from the year ended December 31st, 2016.
Questions or comments? Need a motion.
Motion.
We have a motion and a second to approve the auditor's report. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. And the audit report is adopted. Next item, consultant selection for the Kenswick Great Streets Plan Program.
Thank you. On June 16th, we released an RFQ for consultant services for the coming Kenswick Great Streets Program. By July 17th, closing date, we received 11 submittals. They were screened by East West Gateway staff and then the selection committee reviewed them. The selection committee consisted of East West Gateway staff, MoDOT staff, and then the local project sponsors, City of Kenswick, Jefferson County, and Jefferson County Board of Authority. After doing that, we selected three firms for interview and our associates, Alta, and then also DTLS. After interviews, we reviewed and ranked them and selected Alta on the work. So staff recommendation is to authorize our executive director to negotiate a contract with a team led by Alta Associates to perform the Kenswick Great Streets Planning Assistance work. The contract amount is not to exceed $500,000. In the event we're unable to reach an agreement with Alton, we ask for similar authorization to negotiate with Forest. Same thing. Furthermore, staff recommends executive director be authorized to enter into the funding agreement with the local project sponsors for the 20% match required. So an amount not to exceed $100,000. The agreement like now looks like it'll probably be one agreement on our end with them, but we're asking authorization that could be with one or any of them, up to the three. We don't have it inked yet, it's still being determined the nature of that agreement. Right now, it looks like it's one agreement. Are there any questions?
All right, questions or comments?
I'd just like to make a comment real quick. I mean, we're very fortunate. I know the Great Streets Initiative is a very good program, very competitive. I'd like to acknowledge Neil Broadweiser, who's actually standing in the back. He's our Jefferson County Board Director. He put the application together. When he come to me, he said, what do you think about this? Because he's in our office just down the hall from me. I said, well, just fill it out. You know, we may get it in 2 or 3 years. And, you know, because a lot of times it's very competitive. We actually got it the first year. So for the people on the Illinois side and those on the Missouri side, if you've never been to the city of Kenswick, you're going to see a lot of changes over the next few years down there. We're trying to make it into a really nice destination area for tourism, trying to get the Delta Queen boat. Legislation is in the U.S. House of Representatives now, trying to get passed to have that be the port for that boat to come in and dock and go up and down the river. So I would like to acknowledge Neil Broadweiser for his hard work and thank Paul. I've met with him a couple times and they've been very, very good to deal with. And I would ask that you support this Alta as a recommendation to staff.
Any other questions or comments from anyone? You want to make a formal motion?
Yes, I'd make a motion to approve that.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the recommendation of Alta Planning and Design. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. Consultant has been selected. Congratulations. Next item, approval of the Metropolitan Planning Process Certification and the Air Quality Confirmation Conformity. Jason.
The public comment period for the Draft Transportation Improvement Program, or TIP, an air quality determination document and draft First, I just want to talk about the Metro Compton Planning Process Certification. Each year, East Coast Gateway is required to certify that it's following the Metro Compton Transportation Planning Processes. This document is found in Appendix A of the TIP, as well as the Captain A of the memo. This document is must be signed by MoDOT, IDOT, as well as the Chair of the Board of Directors. This signed self-certification will be included in the final document after it's approved. Air quality performance determination is required in the St. Louis region since we are not and five particular matters. Projects in the final sketch need to be analyzed to determine if they conform to the state budgets. The projects in this analysis is not complete for the projects in the DIP, and the projects do meet the air quality performance requirements. The TIP is a four-year document of projects that are received federal funds in the St. Louis region. This document is also updated each year. Appendix B of the TIP document includes a listing of projects that are proposed. This appendix includes the description of projects, the total cost, as well as the federal funds that are proposed to be obligated. Also, the TIP is required to be fiscally constrained, including the funds to be available to these projects like that. The TIP that we presented today does vary slightly from the draft TIP that was presented at your June meeting. The final TIP contains 761 projects at a cost of about $2.2 billion. This is a net increase of about $66 million and 45 projects. Most of these projects that are being added in were also included in the current FY 2017-2020 transportation program and are being reprogrammed into the new TIP. For example, of these 36 of the changes, the new projects, those are actually the one-time schedule extension that were approved by the board in June. The public comment period for the TIP and the air quality conforming was from June 30th through August 3rd. These documents were available at five open house meetings throughout the East Coast State region during the month of July. Gateway staff were at these meetings, as well as staff from MoDOT, IDOT, as well as the transit agencies and transit agencies. They were available to answer any questions that the public might have on any of the projects in the document. East Coast Gateway staff also held two online chats. One was in coordination with East Coast Dispatch, the other was a Facebook Live event. Overall, 53 people attended the open house meetings, and we had 12 participants in the Coast Dispatch chat and 186 views on our Facebook Live show. A total of 31 comments or questions were submitted during the comment period. The compilation of open house and public comment document is available, and this document details the attendance at the open house meetings as well as the comments that we received. At this time, staff is recommending approval of the Metropolitan Transportation Planning Process Certification, the Air Quality Conformity Determination Document, and the fiscal year 2018-2021 transportation.
Any questions or comments for Jason? Seeing none, need a motion to approve?
Approve.
Motion and a second. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, Bart, sorry.
I just want to
say yes. Thank you. Make note of that? Okay. Thank you, Karen. All right. Motion and approved and one with one abstention. All right. Jason, you're up again with the modification to 2017-2020.
Building Department of Transportation is required to modify the current 2017-2020. They're requesting two projects. The first project is to install traffic signal arrows in Monterey St. Clair County at a cost of $625,000. The other project is to install a new traffic signal at the Illinois Route 161 and the I-64 eastbound arrow, which would be a cost of $150,000. Staff is recommending approval of this
modification. So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. It has been adopted. And last, almost last but not least, regional security expenditures. Nick.
This month's regional security expenditures is a request to purchase a mobile surveillance unit for St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. This is a self-contained unit that's mounted on a trailer that contains cameras that both can read in real time or in infrared. They have pan, tilt, zoom capabilities. They're mounted on the 20-foot taller mast. In addition, the system allows the use of vehicle license plate readers as well as gunshot recognition. The system will turn the cameras in the direction of the gunshot when it's detected. It also comes with its own power plant, which consists of not only the building to be connected to the shoreline, it also has a generator and a solar power to the building. This will allow them to connect back to their real-time communication center at the St. Louis Metro Police Department through a Wi-Fi network that it also provides. This unit, like all things purchased through SPARS equipment funds, is shareable across the region at all requests. The total expenditure is $118,300. Funds will come from the Urban Area Security Mission grant program. Staff recommendations include your expenditure.
Any questions, comments for Nick? If not, need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. They have, the expenditures have been approved. Before we go, got a sad, kind of a sad thing here.
I've got one thing if we can take care of it before we do that.
That'd be fine.
Just wanted to make everybody aware the annual meeting is November the 17th this year. And I wanted to ask Roz Rogers, our manager of community engagement, to talk about the Olga Award nominations.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Our outstanding Olga Awards, the Olga nomination call campaign forms are here. You all should have met the desk and they are also available online. Mm-hmm. As you know, this is one of our highlights of the annual meeting, where we highlight exemplary activity from individuals, municipalities, initiatives. So we ask that you take this back to your office. Please put your thinking caps on and start thinking of people that you would like to nominate or initiatives. If you have any questions or would like some information, please feel free to give us a call at this number. Thank you.
All right, Rob, we all nominate too, Rob. You do. Really good. Anybody got anything else for us? Thank you, ma'am. Retirement is good sometimes, but sometimes it's sad when we got to say goodbye. But Greg Horn, our St. Louis area engineer, St. Louis district engineer, is retiring from MoDOT. And Greg, you've done a tremendous job, and believe me, we are going to miss you. Hopefully we'll get somebody as good or better. Not say anything negative, but hey.
And he goes, try to root for better.
But
this board has been, passed major issues in my 33 years of MoDOT. There's been a lot of discussion and debate, but I can tell you, I've seen it time and time again, we always come up with a better solution. So this board does a lot of important things. So thank you guys for what you do. Thank you for your support for MoDOT over the years. It's been, a real privilege to be associated with this board.
We're so looking forward. Good luck to you. Anybody else? All right. Need a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion. We have a motion and a second to adjourn. Yep. All those in favor?
Aye.
We're good. See you next Monday. Hey, by the way, have a seat.